know, if you're a business owner, I would think about how can I build, you know, the Amazon of AI, right? Like, what are some of the use cases that are very strong? How can this technology be leveraged to do interesting things and better the lives of like of humans? And I would really hyper focus on that and like how I can build a big business around that.
Welcome to Expressive Espresso.
Today is about the power of you.
Anytime I'm scared of something, I feel impelled to attack it.
Expressive Espresso is the coffee shop for leaders like you.
If you don't fail, you're not even trying.
Expand your knowledge about personal development.
Anything that starts with I don't want to work is already a problem.
Entrepreneurship.
Invest in things that you understand.
And leadership.
You will change the world.
This is Expressive Espresso with Alexis DeAngicoli.
Thank you all for joining the podcast. This is Expressive Espresso, and I'm your host, Alexis DeAngicoli. And I know I begin where I say I'm so excited about this interview, but this is something that I'm really excited about because not only has this company found a niche for itself, but it's honestly something that I've never even heard of. And I'm excited to have one of the co-founders of the company, which is called Crafted. If you're from Greensboro, no, we're not talking about Crafted, the restaurant, but we are talking about Crafted, which is the only UGC platform dedicated to food and beverage. Todd Baldwin Jr., thank you so much for joining me, Todd. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me, Alexis. You know, I'm really glad to have this opportunity to come on the podcast and speak with you today.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you. I'd like to start from the beginning, and I just want to have a little bit of your background, and then we can go to what made you decide to open this company.
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit about my background. I'm actually a North Carolina native. I was born and raised in Greensboro, North Carolina. Always was interested in entrepreneurship. My dad, you know, at times was a small business owner. And so I think that's something I resonated with, the freedom of the schedule, the fact that, you know, you kind of get to control your income and ultimately your fate professionally, something that really resonated with me. And then I think there were two events that kind of inspired me to pursue this type of entrepreneurship in particular. The first was reading Elon Musk's biography. The second was Steve Jobs' funeral. What I gathered from those things is that, you know, entrepreneurship can not only be a really great way to own your own schedule and kind of control your own fate, but it also was a really strong way to change the lives of millions. And that was something that really appealed to me. And so I kind of ventured out into businesses that did that for people, for small business owners or consumers. And so that led me to start a company in Kenya. Easiest way to explain it is that we were building an Uber Eats for clean drinking water in Kenya. And so people could essentially order clean drinking water to their doorstep. And under 30 minutes, we deliver it to them using our app. So that was, you know, kind of like my first experience as an entrepreneur. And then with this current company, we've been through a ton of twists and turns, but it all kind of started because I wanted to build a place where we could celebrate culture through the lens of food. And for me, that meant building a live streaming platform for cooking. So like a Twitch for cooking, if you will. So if you're familiar with Twitch, you know, obviously it's the gaming platform where people come and they play games and people interact in the chat. And I wanted a similar space, but, you know, around cultural cuisines and like recipes and that kind of thing. And so we started out with that initial experience. And then the way we were going to actually make money was by placing products, right, on those live streams. So essentially, if they were making a mac and cheese dish, maybe we might get a deal with Kraft and they'll essentially pay to have their product placed on that particular stream. And so we were doing that for a while. We saw a fairly modest viewership, pretty good for live streaming, about 70 viewers on average per live stream, which is pretty good in terms of getting people to one place at one time. But, you know, on the scale of like, you know, advertising, not really that significant. But a lot of the customers that we got in on that business model were very interested in the recordings of like these live streams, these 45-minute live streams. And they were essentially planning to, you know, chop them up and then put them on their social media, right? Their TikTok short form video at this time was really coming into, you know, into itself. And so they wanted to use it to start their TikTok channel, their Instagram reels, their YouTube shorts. And so that kind of like was the light bulb moment for us. We were kind of like, why don't we just do that? why don't we just follow, you know, what our customers asking us to do? And so we stopped there and we kind of thought about the problem of like, you know, creating short form video. And we realized there's a lot of friction points in doing it today, right? First, you need to find content creators that are willing to do it. And then you need to get them, you need to DM a bunch of them to get some of them to respond. When they finally respond, you kind of negotiate pricing with them. You need to hop on a phone call and brief them. You then need to stay on top of them to make sure that they are actually going to fulfill like the requests you have for the video. You then have to figure out a way to get the product shipped out to them. And then you have to, you know, give your feedback suggestions on video drafts, right? And so we thought, wow, there's got to be a better way. And so we, you know, kind of like spoke to like 400 of these brands. And like the result of these conversations was essentially a software platform that allows them to do this seamlessly, right? And so we kind of ran with that. And that's what we've been doing today. That's what Crafted is today. We're a software platform that allows food and beverage companies in particular to develop short form video at scale. And so we do that now for a bunch of companies. We do that for companies like Cinnabon, companies like Trader Joe's, companies like Sam's Club. We also have a beverage brand that we work with that's backed by Dak Prescott and Kylie Jenner. And so we're really excited about the work that we're able to do today and kind of empowering these food and beverage brands to really build brand awareness and, you know, hopefully drive sales through these videos.
Wow. I mean, that is amazing. And one of the questions that I was thinking about while you were speaking was, how were you able to get these brands to trust you? You know, like you were new, you were up and coming and whatnot. And like you said, the process, you know, you would have them, you would reach out to them, DMs.
Yeah. So I think that we started off with brands that were a bit smaller and were just starting out. And those brands are really open to, they're a little more open and willing to try new things. Built for them first. We built a strong rapport. We took the videos that we made for them and we put it on our Instagram story. And then whenever we speak to a new brand, we would essentially show them as an example of our work, right? Like here, we can show you the proof that our videos are high quality, that they're going to be in line with what you need as a brand. And then I think that we also benefited from the fact that a lot of these larger players like Cinnabon and wherever else, like a lot of times they don't have younger people like that are in high places in the organization that understand the way that social media and especially short form video, which is like, you know, only 2 or 3 years old, really, how to really leverage that as a brand to build brand awareness. And so, you know, us becoming subject matter experts, having all these conversations with brands, and just sharing the insights that we found in those conversations was a really great way for them to build trust. Like, hey, look, you know, like, and I don't shy away from how old I am. I'm 24 years old. That was kind of like a way of saying, hey, look, like we are young and this is something that we deeply understand. And we're going to share that level of expertise with you. And we were able to build trust and authority through that process.
It's not that they're out of touch, but they do not have that connection like, you know, your generation or somebody your age would have. I know social media is changing. Can you explain like how you keep yourself and your company current with the changes?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think that the business landscape is always changing. I think that there are like wholesale like changes, like, you know, like the pandemic, for example, that affected not just many, many businesses, but also society as a whole, like everyone, consumers. And right. then there are other changes, right? Like market downturns, right? Which we're kind of like to some degree in right now. And that does change how we kind of like think about running our company. The boom of short form video kind of centered around, you know, the pandemic and people were in their homes. And that's kind of when TikTok and a lot of other platforms kind of really took off. And so we benefited from that particular shift and we capitalized on it by going after this business opportunity. And then in terms of this market downturn, focusing on like profitability, focusing on growing revenue as much as we can while keeping our costs low, you know, was kind of a result of this market downturn. And how can we continue operating a business you know, if we don't have access to capital, as much as we would in other times.
What would you say you have learned from that first business in Kenya?
Absolutely. The answer is a lot. Like, everything that I know, came from that experience. I can kind of distill a few of the major learnings.
Absolutely.
I think that one of the most important things that I've learned during that business was just like how to develop interpersonal relationships. Like that company, I was essentially working with, three or four of the friends that I had met during college. And how do you essentially communicate in a way that is respectful, to everyone else? And how do you, create a team culture where everyone feels valued and able to speak, their piece, and then ultimately come to some sort of decision right at the end of it? And so that was something I really learned a lot about in that moment. I also learned a lot about understanding your customer and how important that is for businesses. And this one had the unique challenge of, I wasn't necessarily the end user of our products, right? So here I am, a college student from the US that is then going all the way to Kenya and essentially trying to solve a problem for them, right? And I think that the issue that a lot of people make when making that transition is they don't stop to ask questions to the locals, right? They come in with like a very Western mindedness, and they fail to spend the time to really understand the culture in that particular region and how their solution might coincide with that. And so when we first got there, we kind of went on a fact-finding discovery mission. And, we sat down on couches and we sat at dinner tables and we went to local shops and we went to community meetings, and we really, really got to understand the problem at a deep level. And we were able to empathize with our customer. And I think that that's something that I definitely carry with me today. So I think that's the second point. I would say the third thing that I probably learned was about managing funds. In the space that I'm in, entrepreneurs are encouraged to spend money to grow and sometimes spend uncontrollably. There's been all of these documents, right? Or all these documentaries rather, that have been about this phenomenon, right? Like there's the We Crash, which is on Apple TV. If you haven't seen that, go see that. And that's somewhat of a good and a bad example of how that went. There's the Uber documentary, there's a Theranos documentary. And like in these businesses, when you have so many like stakeholders, like it's almost like grow. Like there are these people, people on your board, people that are investors into the company that are pushing you to grow unsustainably, right? So like with Uber, offering discounts, there's no way they can sustain over time just to gain market share and kind of get into the space. And then they focus on profitability. And that's fine if you have access to a lot of money. But I think that in this particular business, we didn't have access to a lot of money, right? Not a lot of people and investors in the United States were necessarily interested in investing in a company in Africa, right? In Kenya. It was an emerging market. It was unproven. It wasn't in their skill set. And I mean, to be quite frank, like a lot of the people in the space, like, couldn't really resonate with our customers, right? Like these are oftentimes like older people that, can't really relate to the life of a young African, person that we were serving. And so they didn't get it. They weren't willing to fund it. And so we kind of like, I learned that way that we got to focus on revenue and focus on what the market opportunity is and how can we quickly try to capture that market opportunity to make sure that we have enough money to continue running the company.
When you were saying your experience as far as speaking with the locals there, were they pretty much open, to you asking those questions, or were they hesitant at first, or how was that experience?
Well, honestly, I think that it definitely helped that I was also Black.
Right.
So honestly, most of them thought I was Kenyan until I opened my mouth, honestly. And so I think that definitely helped. They were very, very warm and very, very welcome and accepting people. And that's something that I've also found in my own community in North Carolina. So I'm not surprised at all. But that's right. Something I, they were very, very open and willing to talk and like connect with me. Like I said, probably in some ways because of that, but also just because they're just really kind and open, welcoming people.
Let's say if a brand wanted to get in contact with you and wanted to, start with you, what would they have to do? And what are your requirements from that brand?
Yeah, so today we're kind of focused on enterprise food and beverage brands. So these are things that are like grocery store items, not necessarily like hot foods or, you know, restaurants at this moment, at least we're not focused on that.
Okay.
So if you kind of fit into that category, and, you know, we don't necessarily have target revenue for the customer that we have, the customer that we like to entertain at this moment. But like, in general, we do like to work with companies that have a bit of a bigger budget. That's kind of like the profile of customer that we're looking for. So if there's anybody that works at, you know, a manufacturing company like a Kellogg or General Mills or a PepsiCo, definitely would be open to a conversation, especially if they work in the marketing department. We have a network of 10,000 food content creators that we've already pre-vetted. And so you don't need to come with any in-house like marketing expertise. All they need is just a marketing person to give us a creative brief of like the type of videos that they want us to create. And then we'll pass those instructions along to the creators in our network. And then we'll, you know, for whatever number of videos they ask for, we'll produce those videos in like 3 week span. And then we'll deliver those videos to our clients.
I know that you said that your father introduced you to, he always had like small businesses and things of that sort. Like I said, I can just only assume that your first business was the one in Kenya, but did you have other businesses like when you were younger, and what were they?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a hustler from a young age is the way I like to put it.
Right.
I don't know. I really just took a liking to business like very early on. I remember in elementary school getting in trouble for like selling like laser pointers and candy to my classmates. And like, you know, I wasn't doing it the unorganized way. I like, you know, took out the Microsoft Word and I typed up a list of each candy that I had and the prices and the tiers. And then I remember I had this one business where there was these finger skateboards called Tech Decks. And a friend of mine on a school field trip essentially sold me a bag of like 40 of these decks, right? And he sold it to me for like $30 to $40. Like it was something that was like, gee, I guess he had grown out of them and he was ready to get rid of them. And so he sold them to me. And I don't know what it was in that moment, but like what really struck me was like, okay, you know, and obviously there's like a hierarchy with different brands within these like fingerboards. And there was a whole world that was attached to it. And so I simply essentially separated out the bag of like Tech Decks into three separate like categories. So I had one category, which is the top tier brands, like the coolest boards with the coolest designs and everybody wanted them. And then there was the middle tier of decks where like they were like, you know, kind of cool, but not as exclusive or rare as the top one. And then there were the lower tier ones, the ones that were super common and the ones that people weren't necessarily interested in. Top tier, I like marked the price up like pretty high, and I bought this like, I went to Walmart, you know, begged my mom to take me to Walmart, bought this like Tech Deck holder, like this case that would like display the Tech Decks. So I put the top tier ones in there and I would mark it with that. And then I would have, you know, the middle tier, which I would essentially group into like, you know, like twos and threes and sell them in bundles. And then for the lower tier ones, I just dismantled them because like the great thing about these Tech Decks is that they came with screws and like screwdrivers. You could just take them apart. So you can take the trucks off. You can take the wheels off. And sometimes the wheels will have crazy cool designs and like, you know, you could just kind of like mix and match. And so for that lower tier, I honestly just took it apart like for parts. So I had a bunch of wheels and like, you know, trucks and screws and extra things like that. And I would sell them as replacement parts for the first two tiers, right? And like, obviously at a young age, I did not know what I was doing, right? But like, but it's like very similar to many industries, right? And so that was just like, I guess, an early story of like, either just like things that I would do in terms of businesses. And then I think that when I got a bit older, some of the businesses I did when I was in high school, one of them was a lawn care business. So I essentially like got a couple of my friends, like recruited them out of school to come help me on the weekends to cut grass. And we would go door to door knocking. I printed out marketing materials. We had business cards, signs for the front lawn. I, you know, borrowed some equipment from my dad. You know, he went and found a junkyard and like got some pretty cheap equipment and he got it to work. And so we would essentially load up his truck and he had like an extra thing in the back. And we would just hit our customers. And I was able to kind of grow that business, you know, a good amount. And so that was like kind of like some of my early business experiences that I had.
Seems like you really had that hustler mentality, and you still do. What made you transition into software?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that it was, you know, watching Steve Jobs' funeral. That's the founder, CEO, and co-founder of Apple. And also reading Elon Musk, like the co-founder of Tesla and now CEO of Twitter, reading his biography. And their companies were mostly tech focused. And I think that software and technology, I don't know, I'm trying to figure out the right way to word this, but essentially there is leverage with software, right? Like essentially some businesses only scale with the number of people that you can hire. So if you're running, you know, an agency, but you know, every single client you have, you need at least one person to be working that account. That means you can only scale proportional to the number of people that you hire. But with software, you can kind of build something once. For example, we're building this platform once, this software platform, and it can be used by as many people as it needs to be without you having to hire anybody additional. Obviously, you need engineers that would need to maintain the software. But, you know, for example, a company of five, right, can produce a product that's used by millions. And like, there's some really great examples out there today of that. Like WhatsApp, for example, had a very small engineering team. This is a WhatsApp or GroupMe. One of them had a really, really small engineering team, like 20 people, but they were servicing like, you know, like a billion users or something, you know, on that magnitude. And I think that really just like shows you the power of software. You kind of build once and then like a bunch of people can use it.
How would you integrate, I guess, AI into, or would AI integrate with your platform at all?
That's a really great question. I'm glad you asked me that. I have a lot of ideas. I have so many. Where do I start? Wow. yes. So essentially right now, the artificial intelligence space is like booming, right? And I think that many people have just begun to just imagine what is possible with this technology. It's extremely powerful and extremely dangerous. You know, as you mentioned, the government, the governmental hearings, the congressional hearings. But yeah, so how I think about it for our business perspective are a few things, right? So I think, I'm not sure if I fully explain how everything works, but essentially whenever a brand, you know, requests a certain number of videos on our platform, we kind of match it to creators from our network of 10,000 people. And that matching can be due to a number of things. Like we obviously want to make sure we give more jobs to the higher performing creators. We also want to make sure that we kind of match the niche. So if there is a brand that is doing, you know, burgers, then obviously they should not be matched with somebody who is a plant-based creator. They should be matched with somebody who's maybe a grilling dad or somebody that matches their target demographic, right? And I think that AI could be really helpful in analyzing that information and that data. So there's that perspective. And then there's artificial AI generated like images and videos, right? And that's a super interesting space, right? You've seen kind of in the music space where, you know, Drake, for example, like his AI released a song recently, and it sounds just like him, right? Sounds just like him and The Weeknd, but it's not, right? They essentially took all of the recordings of his voice before and they then auto-generated something that sounded exactly like him. And so, honestly, I could see that being a potential way that we generate videos on our platform in the future. I think that there definitely is something special about the human touch and like authenticity that we have right now with our current content creator network. And I think there's always going to be room for that like in the space. But I definitely think that you're going to start to see more and more like AI generated images and AI generated videos on social media like day to day. And I'm very excited to be a part of that process as we start to do that. And so that is very much something that we're considering and looking forward to doing in the future.
I think that's so cool. So what would you gave me an example of Drake and The Weeknd, but what would an AI generated video kind of look like?
Yeah, so that's the thing. So you, if you give it a prompt, it can look like whatever you want it to look like. And so there's essentially platforms out there. One that is for images, I'm pretty sure it's called Stable Diffusion. And it's very simple, right? So you essentially give it a prompt, like show me a video of a frog, you know, like on a unicycle floating through space with a black background, right? And it will literally generate like, and those are in words, right? And it'll literally generate an image or a video that follows that prompt, right? And so, you know, an example for, you know, our particular use case might be that you come to our platform and you say, hey, look, I want 50 videos that showcase my product in fall recipes, right? We have a lot of people that, you know, they like to advertise around certain seasons, certain holidays. And so you can come and ask for, you know, seasonal videos that showcase my product in this way. And I want this to be the background, and I want this to be the attributes and, like, you know, the different features of my product that I want them to focus on. And then essentially our platform would essentially do that using AI. And so you get, you know, 50 videos that look exactly like you asked them to in terms of the prompt. And so, like, that's just like really, really, we're really reaching an amazing point in technology and history. And I'm like, honestly, just very glad to be, I don't know, alive during this moment and able to witness this. And I think that we all will look back on this year and like this time frame is like a very pivotal moment in history and technology, almost like the birth of the internet. Even though we have a focus on enterprise and small business, our vision is that we can essentially make this technology available to even small business owners, right? That's kind of where we got our start, you know, with mom and pop shops. A lot of these founders that were starting these snack brands or these food brands, you know, were immigrants, or they were women, they were people of color. I think even today, like 80% of our customers are either women, people of color, or immigrants, right? And I definitely just have a really strong passion for supporting business owners that are in that space. And so it's kind of like our vision and goal to open our technology and our software up to those companies like in the next like 4 or 5 to 6 months.
And so as we come to the end of this interview, I do like to ask the staple of this question. But this was only a little while ago for you, but still, it's still relevant. When a person is 12 years old, they're going into middle school, and it's kind of a pivotal age for them because they are, you know, learning about themselves, learning a little bit more, trying to become into the person that they feel like they want to be. And as you described, at this point in time, we are actually at the, I guess, the second birth of the internet, right? Or maybe the third. I don't know what you may want to call it, but it's a rebirth of it. What would you tell your 12-year-old self as far as where you are now? What advice would you give your 12-year-old self?
Yeah, great question. So I have thoughts. Let's see. So I think that from a money, and this is advice I would give to anyone, even if you're not 12, especially if you're older and, like, you know, you're considering investments. Imagine if you get in on the ground floor of Google, right? Let's say you invested in Google and, like, you know, back in the early 2000s, right? Right. Or you were able to invest in Facebook when it first came out and, like, you know, the late, you know, 2000, like around 2010 or whatever. Or you were able to invest in Netflix. Like, you know, all these things like kind of came at a time where the technology was just ready for them to really kind of take off. You know, for Facebook, it was, you know, software engineering getting to a point where you could do things to create, not even just consume content on the internet, but also create content as a user that can be viewed by others. You know, obviously Google like enabled this entire world of search that just was possible once the internet had been invented. And so I think that similarly, there's going to be a lot of new companies that are going to become huge one day. And they may seem huge in like 2 or 3 years, but they're going to get even bigger, like 10x, 100x bigger over the next 10 to 15 years. So I would say invest. Like, you know, I would maybe take as much as I can. You know, I don't care if it's, you know, $100 and I can only buy one share, or if it's $1,000, $10,000, and I can kind of spread it around to different companies that I see, you know, IPOing and entering this market. But I would invest heavily and spread myself as much as I could across the industry, because I think that inevitably a lot of that is going to grow, and that's going to lead to significant wealth like in like 10 to 15 years. I think that the early investors in Amazon, early investors in Google would definitely agree, early investors in Facebook, early investors in Uber. And so I think that I would definitely suggest doing that from an investment standpoint. And then from a, you know, contributing standpoint, right? Like, how can I take advantage of this as, you know, as a professional, as an employee, or as a business owner? As a 12-year-old, I would tell my 12-year-old self that you need to learn the core principles of AI. So like, in general, like things that are involved right now, right? You need to learn how to train a model. You need to learn how to clean data. You need to learn, you know, a few things, right? I would build this skill set that like not that many people have. For example, you know, software engineering, right, is a very rare skill set, right? And because it's so rare, the pay for it is very high, right? Like there are people that are coming out of undergrad making north of six figures to write code, right? And it's such a rare skill and it's so monetizable that like I would focus on developing it, because like the internet and software engineering has been around for like 20, 25, 30, 40 years and it's still a scarcity. Imagine if it, at the beginning of, you know, the internet, like how many people were actually building websites, right? There was a small handful and they were able to charge whatever they wanted because only a small people had that skill set. So I would say if you were 12, I would learn those things. I would become really, really smart. And like, there's only going to be, at the beginning, there's only going to be a small number of people that have the necessary skill sets to do this. And then you'll be able to make a lot of money off that. You know, if you're a business owner, I would think about how can I build, you know, the Amazon of AI, right? Like, what are some of the use cases that are very strong? How can this technology be leveraged to do interesting things and better the lives of like of humans? And I would really hyper focus on that and like how I can build a big business around that. Because I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for business owners, for professionals, and for investors like in this new space.